Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to a new season of the Ninth State Sports Show Lacrosse Edition. My name is Joe Marcellina. Joining me for another spring, Dairyfield AD and boys lacrosse coach Chris Hetler. Chris, how you doing today?
Here we go, Joe. We are less than a week away from go time. It's Monday the 18th. It's coming fast here.
It's coming fast. The weather is more than fantastic. Given how I feel like springs have gone, you know, in the recent past, I feel like we're usually bundled up still. So it's nice to have the sun. Sun is out, no rain, warmer weather. Looks like it might hold on to that for a little bit next week. Is there a better time to be alive?
Well, congratulations. You just jinxed it for all of us, Joe. It'll be a snowstorm in May now when we want it. But, yeah, we'll take it. Hey, to start the season, you know, fields are drying out. People will be able to get outside. I mean, normally this time of year, a lot of people will be in parking lots. And,
right.
You know, it looks like we might be able to get on grass fields early. So that'd be great.
Fingers crossed.
It was a great winter. It was a great winter indoor season. And, you know, kids are itching to get outside. Ready to go? Yeah, we'll be getting on a plane to Florida and Monday morning.
Now you're not worried about the weather at all, then? Huh?
I mean, I'm hoping for, you know, a couple, no thunderstorms.
Oh, that's of course,
there,
yeah.
But, you know, yeah, got my sunblock packed.
Well, as always, you can share your feedback or thoughts on the show by sending an email to nhhighschoolsports@gmail.com, or by connecting with us on social media. You can follow the site on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube at @nhhsports. good weather?
I mean, it's okay. I mean, I'm looking at the next – this is Manchester for the next 2 weeks.
Oh, okay. I thought you were showing me Florida weather.
I think you're getting fall spring today. I mean, we got a lot of mid-40s for the –
for
mid-40s
next week.
And rain, yeah. And snow. So, but
– things could change.
You know, things can change, as it does. But.
New boys lacrosse shows will be posted every Thursday morning through the end of the regular season. Of course, we structure shows around playoff dates a little bit differently once we get there. And you can always listen to them by going to nh-highschoolsports.com or by searching Ninth State Sports Show on Spotify or Odyssey. All right, before we get started, let's tell you about our sponsor. The Ninth State Sports Show is proudly sponsored by Prolax Custom. Since 2018, Prolax Custom Lacrosse of Bedford has been the region's go-to source for boys' stick stringing and custom lacrosse head dyes. Don't settle for a hand-me-down stick or mass-produced factory pocket when you can get a stick dialed in for your position and playing style from Prolax Custom. Whether it's a brand new stick, a restring of your existing stick, or a full custom dye job to stand out from the crowd, every customer they work with gets one-on-one service and satisfaction guarantee. With access to every major brand, Prolax Custom is your hometown source for your next stick. Visit them on Instagram or at prolaxcustoms.com.
Joe, I got to tell you, we just got our new supply in for the middle school. We got a lot of kids coming out this year that are newer to the game, needed a good stick to throw with right out of the gate. And because it's hard if you're trying to teach fundamentals, if you're trying to teach a kid how to pass and catch and they got a factory strung stick, or they got a stick that's bagged out or maybe no pocket at all, it makes it 10 times harder to learn to pass and catch. And you know, Prolax Customs and Joe Prude did a fantastic job of getting us a bunch of sticks ready to go for the season here. So we're thankful to them again.
I'm gonna have to work on that, reading that, because that's a lot of X's and sticks back to back there. So a little tongue twister at some point. I was trying to make sure I didn't flub that anywhere.
And if I'm not mistaken, I think they are also sponsoring the season for you this year.
Perhaps we'll get to that later.
Okay.
If you're interested in being one for the Ninth State Sports Show or anything else to do at nh-highschoolsports.com, like the coaches poll or preseason watch list, please let us know. Send an email to nhhighschoolsports@gmail.com.
So I may have jumped the shark with the sponsor there, but do you have a new season lineup, correct?
It's in the works.
Teaser for the next episode?
Teaser for a future episode.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. Maybe you think it might be ready to roll out by maybe come D1 D1 preview.
That soon, but I want to sit on it for a little while. We still got to finish up the basketball season here.
Okay.
You know, I gotta do my final interviews with the Pinkerton girls basketball team later this week. And put a couple of those final episodes together first.
All right.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. And then, like I told you when I got here, foot in two seasons right now.
All right.
Which is
we'll be looking forward to it when you can announce it.
Which it would explain why I've been maybe a little more scatterbrained than usual, if you can believe that, this week. And it's, you know, also this week, I'm sure no one probably wants to think about this, but I said to you before we got started, 4 years ago today was kind of when, for me at least, when the stuff started hitting the fan, it became obvious that we were in trouble. And I think the big reason why was because you saw, we'd already seen the NBA postpone games. NHL, I think, followed suit on this day 4 years ago. College basketball suspended all the conference tournaments that were left and the NCAA tournament.
I believe it was a Friday.
It was right? A Friday. Yeah, it was Friday the 13th.
Okay.
Spring training, I think, was postponed today. And the NHIA put a hold on all of the rest of the winter playoffs.
So I remember that because it was our last Friday going into our spring break. We do 2 weeks in March there, and I remember all of a sudden thinking like maybe this is real because I went to Hannaford. I went to Hannaford because they're like, oh, we might not be able to, you get the bread and the milk, right, and the eggs or whatever. And literally, I remember putting a basket a carton of eggs into my basket, turning down the aisle to get something else, and turning around and someone taking the carton of eggs out of my basket, and I was like, all right, you need them way more than I do. then I was like, oh, maybe this is real.
People are
serious about this. And I just thought it was like it was kind of hilarious to me. But then, you know, everything really did shut down after that.
I did the same thing, too. Went to Market Basket after work that day. And it was a madhouse. I remember standing in a line that wasn't really. It was one of those ones that I look back in hindsight and I was like, if any one of these people had had COVID at that time, we would have had COVID. It was like a herd of cattle.
It is funny in that respect. You know, I think actually cases at that time were pretty low in New Hampshire, but it is
funny to
think about that. Everybody's shutting down and you're right. Like we were all in one place trying to buy all kinds of food and stuff. But yeah, I don't really want to think about that anymore, Joe. Thanks for bringing that up.
No problem.
I'm glad we're
I bring it up to segue into what I wanted to start with today. Which is kind of an update on what this spring is going to look like on the website, because it's going to be a little bit different because things are different for me. I never really talked about it much, but for anyone that didn't know, I also had a part-time job for most of the time that I've been doing this site. Initially I was working at the Telegraph and left there, and when I left there, I started working at the Craft Beer Cellar in Nashua, which if you just heard that name, you can figure out the obvious reasons why I never really talked about it, because we're doing high school sports. I'm not really going to spend a lot of time talking about craft beer. but that had been my part-time job. I was working about 20 hours a week there on average. And good thing, I'm grateful that I was there, because when everything shut down for about 6 months with no high school sports, that kind of saved me working there. But it got in the way of a lot of stuff, because like any job, you start taking on additional roles, and all of a sudden those additional roles are now your roles. I'm sure you've experienced
that
in jobs.
But also knowing you, Joe, and your work ethic and how seriously you take things, I would think that, you know, you make a commitment to somebody, you're gonna see it through to its fullest.
Sure,
and,
yeah.
Like you said, in all jobs, sometimes that gets taken advantage of.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
But we're happy. I mean, we definitely want to make sure things are good on your end, but we're happy to have you in the lacrosse world more able to cover things.
Yes, because now that store no longer exists. We closed at the end of the year. Rather than picking up more work, I figured it was a good opportunity to
double down
on the website, on this, you know, on the business I started here, and making sure or seeing if it's something that's going to work, long term, as a full time for real, I think is how I described it to you and the other coaches.
You know, I was BCC'd on it, but you sent an email out the other day, I think, to what, all the coaches?
Coaches, yep. Yep.
Yep. To all the coaches, kind of plug in, hey, this is where you can send me scores after the game. There's a link right to the website. You had a link to your lacrosse membership for not only the season but the entire year, I would think, too, right?
It does give you access. The signing up for the lacrosse membership gives you access to the site for the year, and also any future yearbooks that come out for the spring.
Cool.
Yeah. But, you know, there are a lot of things that are going to be the same. Obviously, we're going to still be doing podcasts that will be on the site every Thursday. Coach's Poll will return starting with week one, that first Monday. Will be the release of our preseason poll.
How are we looking for coaches, Paul? Do we have all the coaches signed up?
We might need a couple more.
All right. So if you're a coach out there listening and you're actively engaged in watching games and you want to get involved, get in touch with Joe.
Yeah. We might have a couple of more media members as well. I don't want to. We've done a good job, I think, of never revealing who's voting in the poll, which I think was a selling point when we were trying to find voters. So I will hold off on revealing maybe who those people are, if they don't want to. But we will also be doing the preseason watch list again, of course, previews as we get into the season. But probably the biggest change that people are going to see on the site is in terms of game coverage. I meant to go back and double check, but if I remember correctly, including playoffs last year, I think I went to, from start to finish for a game, I think I was at 37 games last year, start to finish, which on the one hand to me doesn't sound like, I feel like I was at more, and I did go to some, I was there for a half, or I was there for, a little bit here and there.
Think of it as a 10-week season, that's over three games a week.
Almost four games a week, right. Yeah. But then that's including playoffs too. Really, the regular season's 7 weeks.
Right.
It's a lot. And I'm not saying I'm going to stop going to games, but what I am going to stop doing is writing game stories off of every single game that I am at in full. Not just because it's time-consuming, but I don't think that's what people want anymore. Just looking at numbers, page views, visits, membership numbers, I don't necessarily feel like that's what, for big games that might be different, like BG Pinkerton, like that's always going to be a big game. Probably going to do a story off that. I'd be surprised if I didn't. But, just your average Tuesday afternoon game.
Sure.
Maybe not so much.
So are you thinking more highlights and box scores?
More, well, videos will definitely be there. As you said, I sent the coaches the link to the submission page on the website. Now that I have that extra time, I'm planning on using it to reach out to everybody. Like I said in my email that you coaches got, by the time we get to June, you're going to be sick of hearing from me. It's something that I would like to focus on doing daily, is reaching out to whoever's playing that day, getting results, putting together, the results page, but also maybe some other news and notes, more features. I definitely like writing more of those profile type stories or feature type stories on, especially on kids. You'll see a lot more of that. I feel like those are kind of the things that maybe people want a little bit more. And of course, the podcasts, this is the year we're going to do it. I'm going to be starting a weekly girls podcast, in 2 weeks. Going to look a little different from this one, 'cause I think it's going to be rotating coaches. But that's going to happen.
The way it was back in the day, though. You used to, in the boys' side, you used to have a rotating group of coaches that would come
early through. Early on, yeah, very early on, yeah. So a lot of, I don't want to say a lot of changes, but hopefully things that people are going to be more interested in, than things that I just kind of fell back on because, things would maybe get busy, and I just say, okay, well, I can do this.
If coaches have ideas, are you open to them pitching?
Absolutely. Yeah. Send me anything that you, even if you think it's, I'd rather you email me something and look at it and say, what's the worst that happened? I say no. But even then, I can't remember a lot of times that someone has sent me something and I said, well, this is just no.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's going to be a little bit different this year, but I think it's going to be for the best.
I think it'll be good. Yeah.
And like I said, I will still be at games. I'm still going to talk to people. I'm still going to be getting the video highlights. Still be taking photos. Just that last element there of a daily game story, or sometimes multiple game stories, is not going to be there.
Well, and I'm still waiting. We teased her. I can't wait to hear what you're doing for the season this year.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's get into some of the actual stuff that's going to maybe go on the field this year. Every year they do these rule changes like beginning of the school year, right? Like I was looking at the date on this NFHS.
Yep.
I think it's like August.
They're proposed, you know, around this time. They go through, you know, iterations during the summer, and then they get approved, and they put them out, you know, before the new year.
Right.
And so as coaches tonight, we're having our rules interpretation meeting. Tim Bethke, longtime head official, one of the head officials, is coming to meet with us tonight and kind of go over the major changes to the rules, do some reviews, do some face-off mechanic work in terms of what they're looking for. You know, and then basically, you know, any questions that coaches, it's a good opportunity for new and old coaches to kind of get clarifications on things and, you know, go through that kind of stuff with them.
And honestly, maybe no better official to have you, or to have do that for you. Explains it with the best of them. I heard him doing it a number of times during indoor season this year. And I heard parents, I thought the reaction would be, what is he doing? Like, why is he stopping the game? I overheard parents saying, oh, I love this official. Like, I wish that more officials did this. I will say I was kind of stunned by that.
It's their money if they want, Tim. We appreciate Tim, and we appreciate how much time he takes to talk through the kids and help them understand what's going on, and even some of the coaches. It's good. So we're excited to have him tonight and talk over some of the changes there.
But there's probably two ones that we were discussing that are probably the
two main
like,
ones.
Big change. Like, there's a couple.
There's a lot of wording that got changed in there, just clarifications on things. But there were two major things. A helmet rule, basically, if the helmet comes off. I mean, so what they're trying to do is, you know, a lot of kids are wearing their helmets super loose or their chin straps on, and when the helmet comes off, basically they've changed it to basically you have to leave the field until the next dead ball, which in lacrosse could be a little while.
Sure.
So, you know, you like that is a major point of emphasis that I'm going to have with my kids. Look, make sure it was never a big, like most of my kids, their helmets are all buttoned up and tied up anyway, but you want to make sure that your helmet's on and it's not coming off, because that it could really affect the play.
I mean, I guess you see it happen in football too. I mean, they like, but
clearly
you, but in
football,
you have stoppages every single play where they tell kids, you know, if their chin straps aren't buckled, if their mouthpieces aren't in, they can stop them.
Right.
And make sure that they are. I mean, I imagine this is a lot harder in a sport like lacrosse where you're constantly moving, unless there's a whistle that stops a play.
It's funny. I talked to Tim and some of the other officials about it, and they have seen it happening a lot, the college game too. But my question is, and I don't know how many people know that, but Cascade has come out with a new helmet that has magnets for the chin straps. Hmm. So they're on there. And I haven't had a chance to, you know, see it firsthand. And you had to pay for it. It didn't come standard with the helmet. But, like, I don't know. I can see. Maybe that's why it's happening at the college level more, because, you know, the schools bought ones with the magnets on the side, and you get hit and the helmet comes off. And, you know, because, I mean, if it's a magnet, it's in theory,
I can't imagine,
it's not going to be.
Yeah, I can't imagine a magnet giving you a very tight
right
fit.
But again, like, I haven't you know seen it first.
One,
I haven't seen
one
it
hell of a magnet,
so I, like, it would have to be one hell of a magnet. I mean, it's definitely easier to get the chin strap off, but let me ask you, Joe, was it really that hard to get the chin strap off before? Like, could you if you're a lacrosse player and you can't pull your chin strap off, maybe you got to get in the weight room a little bit more. I don't know if that was that big of an issue before,
I mean, but, I feel like don't the football ones I feel like have like a maybe this is the magnet thing. They have like a button. Some of the newer ones have like a button that like lets it go when you're going to take it off, and then you just tighten it.
And you tighten it back up.
I don't something like that. Yeah.
So that's something to watch for. And then the real major one is an emphasis on checks to the head and neck area, where the rule was before it was a 2-minute non-releasable penalty when it was called, and so they've changed the rule to a 1-minute non-releasable penalty there, with the ability to assess more if they feel it's egregious. And you and I were talking before the podcast about that and kind of the rationale behind it. The rationale was that referees were hesitant to make that call, right? Because it is such a harsh penalty. And I think, well, I'll let you give your thoughts on that.
I know. I talked it out, and I feel like I said all these things, and then I got to the end of it, and I realized I'm looking at this too black and white. It really is more gray. And the wording for the rationale, I guess, kind of makes it make more sense to me now that I look at it. It says, the committee is seeing a reluctance to call a 2-minute non-releasable penalty for incidental contact to the head and neck area, which my thinking, I kind of was taking it as that was already implied. Like, obviously, if it's incidental and doesn't warrant 2 minutes, then don't give them 2 minutes. But
they couldn't before, right?
But yeah, right. So I guess when taking that more into consideration than I was, it makes sense because, yeah, sometimes you don't intend to commit a foul, but you commit a foul.
Right.
And there needs to be some kind of penalty. And I guess that 1 minute kind of gives you that,
1 minute that leeway. 1 minute gives you that leeway. You know, I'm interested to see how tight they do call it because, you know, in lacrosse, oftentimes, you know, we have slashes, right? But, you know, in the coaching world, it's kind of known as a brush, right? Like,
yeah,
it wasn't real intentional. It didn't cause any harm. Didn't affect the play. You know, the referee does one of these things, you know, waves his hand like, yeah, it's a brush. Like, we're going to let that go. I don't know. Are they going to do the same thing? Like, a cross check is a little bit different. I think, you know, it's a little bit more intentional. If your hands ride up the shoulder, you know, if you're really riding the shoulder of somebody and it goes up and slams into the guy's neck or head, I think you are going to see more 1 minute penalties there and more of an emphasis of, look, you really got to play the body, have your hands together, get down on the guy's hip and drive him out. You know, you rarely hit the guy in the head or the neck if you do that. You know, so those are the two major ones that I think that Tim is really going to emphasize tonight and show some video on, for the guys there, for the coaches.
You know, you're right. A lot of these other ones though are just, like you said, clarifying language. Like, I was looking at some of them and I thought these were changed a year or two ago, but a lot of them say
it's more the wording just to clarify, clarify things in there.
Yeah. But some of them, you know, are things that I feel like were changed somewhat recently within, like, let's say the last 5 or 6 years that maybe people still don't know. Like, and the one that kind of stands out is that a goal can be counted if it's shot before the whistle. And I remember the first time I saw that was actually one of your games, I want to say in 2019, where I forget who, but someone just chucked it down the field right before the whistle. And it didn't end up going in, but it came
pretty close
enough.
Yeah.
And I feel like one of the officials didn't know that it could count.
They were walking off the field.
They were walking.
What you're talking about. They weren't paying attention. They weren't paying attention to it. Since that time, we've had at least two, if not three, right at the end of quarters where they were released before the whistle, and the refs were paying. They were goals. We've scored two or three goals off of that. And I actually train our goalies in defense. We do situational things like that where, and a lot of times just for fun, like we do it at the end of practice where, like, the other team has it at their restraining box or at midline. And just launch one, you know, do a countdown, and they've got to pay attention and knock it down and get possession of it. Because, until the ball stops, if it crosses the goal line, it's a goal.
So is there anything, obviously, you know, the NFHS makes these changes. Is it mandatory? It's got to be somewhat mandatory with some of the safety. I imagine with the safety rules that the NHIA
adopts
them.
The NHIA follows everything that the NFHS does. The other thing that, you know, in the coaching world that we've been talking about, and you've seen it, New York this year is experimenting in a lot of their regions with a shot clock. Long Island's doing it. Upstate New York's doing it. It hasn't been adopted by the NFHS yet. I know the prep school leagues around here, the Lakes region, other things like that, they do it. Would love to see it come to lacrosse in New Hampshire. I doubt it will have if we can't get a shot clock in basketball.
I was just going to say we can't have a shot clock
and
in lacrosse before basketball.
Everybody says it's the expense. I don't believe it's the expense. I believe it's more I've experienced it as an AD with basketball. It's hard enough to get people to run the clock and the book as it is in basketball. You know, with lacrosse, as much as it has become an established sport, it's still, I would argue, it's still in the minds of athletic directors and athletic departments is not at the level of basketball in our state. And so trying to find competent people to run, you know, the clock, and now with a shot clock there's a lot that goes into it. I mean, I've talked to some officials in terms of, like, is there a way to do it on the field? You know, like, they used to have buzzers, right, that when we were doing the counts, like, to clear the ball, you'd have buzzers that would go off.
Don't they still have those?
They do, but it's less it's just a straight, you know, it used to be a 20 and 10. Now you've got it there. And so I don't know. I thought of some way, you know, you could almost have the officials keeping it on the field, and they get buzzed when there's 30 seconds left. They give a signal over to the benches or something. I don't know, some way to cut down it. Because you've been to a lot of places where you're playing out in a cornfield in New Hampshire, and there may not even be.
I mean, I would feel like it'd be tougher to get a shot clock in lacrosse than it would be in basketball, to install an actual shot clock that people can see. But then on the other hand, so I when we
they make some pretty good portable ones.
Whenever the discussion with basketball has come up, I like to bring up football, because there's a play clock that is kept by. I think it's the back judge. The guy that's all the way at the end keeps a play. And when he gets to 10 seconds, he puts his hand up. When it gets to 5 seconds, he starts waving that hand, counting off the last 5 seconds.
So in most football stadiums, they don't actually
in no high school football stadiums
so
do they
doable.
Have that.
It sounds like
and when they used to play the finals at UNH, they wouldn't turn on the game clock. They wouldn't use the game clocks, at least from what I remember. I don't think that they did. Kind of like how they stopped using the replay board after the first year, and people were getting upset that, you know, maybe a call was being missed on the. But that's another story for another day.
Was kind of what I was getting at. Is like, is there a way? You know, it would probably. I don't know if they could still continue to do it with 2-man crews that we usually have.
Yeah, it would be really tough.
Require a 3-man crew, and the honest truth is, I mean, Bill Ball will tell you we need more lacrosse officials in the state. We're already. You know, so that would probably be the biggest hindrance to doing that.
I feel like it would be the same thing with basketball. Like if an official was trying to keep the shot clock on the court,
right.
You'd need a third official out there. And although I was surprised to see, usually when we start the playoffs here, you don't get three officials until quarterfinals. And every prelim I was at this year had three officials.
Yeah, I think they were trying to train. I won't say anything. They paid for them too. Like we didn't have to pay for them, which was really nice. We appreciate that. And so, you know, I think maybe that was part of a training program to get more officials.
Get the experience of being a playoff game. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Because I mean, there were definitely a lot of newer officials that I saw this year.
And I know Bill Ball's been great. Like if you want three officials at your lacrosse game, he will do everything he can to make that happen for you. So he's very open to having a 3-man crew. It's just I think it would be very difficult to do that for every varsity game and have all of our games covered on a regular basis.
Is there anything that different that the NHIA is doing this year with lacrosse in terms of anything that you know, like rules wise, I guess I know there's some other different changes that we'll get into.
No real differences in rules changes. No, I mean, as you alluded to, you know, and it's your weekly rant. You know,
this is going to be, I think I said I was going to just mention it every week. The rant will be this week.
Okay.
And then I'll let it go until
unfortunately, you know, all the finals will be at different locations this year. They'll all be played. And not only will they be at different locations, but they'll all be played at the same time.
Yeah. I'm going to save the whole spiel till the end.
Okay.
Right. But there's another tease for you. Get everybody to keep listening all the way through. So the one other change though that I wanted to mention too this year is because last year was the first year of the 2-year cycle, this cycle was also the first time that you had the ineligibility rule go into play for playoffs. Teams that petitioned down in all sports except hockey, ice hockey, were not eligible in the first year to make the playoffs. There's only three teams that applies to in boys lacrosse. Keene, Monadnock, Spalding in D2, petitioned down from D1 to D2, and then Milford, which petitioned down from 2 to 3.
Correct.
So this year, all three of those programs are eligible to make the playoffs. I'm trying to remember last year. I think maybe Keene might have been, they were around the cusp. I think on the girls' side, there were more like Milford in D3, Manchester Central was down. They were in D2. They would have made the playoffs if they had been eligible. I don't remember if Keene was on the boys' side or not. But this year, those three programs are eligible to get in.
Which is great.
Yeah.
I mean, it gives, you know, it'll give those kids an opportunity. I mean, at some point, probably last year, it was probably tough. The teams, you know, probably weren't having a great season and realized that, okay, I can't go to the playoffs anyway. But this year, that carrot will continue to be there and throughout the whole season. And last year, the 14th seed in Division II that made it in was Hanover at 4-10. The next two seeds after that were 7-8. So, you know, I mean, you won't be out of it for you know, most teams for the majority of the season will have life throughout the at least in Division II. And I would even think in most divisions there, even in Division I and III, where they're taking less teams into the playoffs, but still there's less teams in those divisions. So, you know, that'll be nice for those schools.
The one thing that does do, though, is the rule states if you get into the playoffs in that second year,
I was just going to bring that up.
You have to go back up.
Yep. Which is interesting because it's already been done, so that, you know, they'd have to redo, alignment.
I haven't even thought about
that.
So
it's already been done, and those teams, I'm pretty sure those teams did petition back down again. So it would, you know, the schedules haven't been built yet. So at least part of it.
I mean, if you go to the NHIA website now, the schedules for this year look like they haven't even been built
yet. They're being verified right now. They were due last week, and so everything is in. I think they were due on, what was last Monday? Monday the 4th?
4th, yeah.
So they were due, and so they should be verified and up there pretty soon.
A lot of them, I mean, if you go to the school's individual pages, their schedules are there. It's just they haven't been... Someone hasn't switched on the button to flip them all in there yet. So,
yep.
Which brings us to, I think this is probably a good week to talk about out-of-state games because we're still getting into the year. There's not a ton of them, but there are a handful of programs
really good ones.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But before we get into our season previews, but also we'd like to talk about, you know, some stuff that's coming up. So, I think this is, like I said, a good week to look at some of these matchups. And obviously the big ones every year, you know, BG and Pinkerton, who are they playing out of state? Because they've historically played a lot of out-of-state teams. You know, with the way the schedule is, you have to play 12 games against your division. You can only play a total of 18 games. So six games are – you can schedule those six other games. You don't have to play 18. But that gives you six games to play whoever you want.
And BG, they loaded up. They took their full six. They're
and this year,
pretty powerhouse teams.
I mean, this year, just looking back, I know Lax rankings put out their official, or Lax numbers put out their New Hampshire rankings on Instagram yesterday. It's not up on their website yet, but
which I think. Actually, if you look at it, I'd be interested to go back to the end of last year. I think all it is
basically
where teams
where
ended
they were
up last
it's
year.
Well,
yeah.
I don't think they
looked and projected. I think they just basically took what
last year's
what last
top
year's
10. Well,
top 10
that's
was.
Interesting because on the girls' side, they had Hollis Brookline listed twice in their
Weird.
In the top 10.
Huh.
I knew they were D2 champs last year, but
I love what Lax numbers does, but I'm pretty sure I don't know that their algorithm is that good to predict what freshmen.
All right, well, we're not gonna pick that apart today. What the reason I brought it up? Was because of what we were going to look at BG's schedule. So they play with the schedule. You know, they play a lot of the teams that they played a year ago. They've got scheduled the top three teams in Mass from last year. The number 5 team, the number 9 team, and then one of the top teams from Connecticut in Staples once again this year.
At some cool venues, too.
Yeah. Not all of them are at Cellos or... True road game. Staples was 3 in Connecticut, by the way, last year. You know, they open up the year, second week of the season, St. John's Prep and Staples back to back. Those are the ones that you were alluded to. The St. John's game will be at Merrimack College, and then the Staples game is going to be at Providence College.
Yeah. I mean, not true neutral site games, but also not true home games for St. John's Prep and Staples.
Sure. Both of those should be pretty fun, pretty cool to be at.
I would argue easier
fields.
Drives for them than BG, but still not.
Oh
not
yeah,
true
definitely.
Home games.
Yeah, definitely. Those are both in the second week of the season in April, and then in May, they've got a. Oh, did I miss one? Two.
No, you got it. Zavarian on the.
Oh
the
yeah,
ninth.
Just because that last week they've got two more. Zavarian, you're right. Zavarian Brothers. They play May 9th at Stelos. So, you know, that they've had some really good games over the years. So if you're looking to see a good lacrosse game, that one it's a 6 o'clock start too.
On a Thursday. I was hoping that'd be a Friday night game, but that'll be still Thursday night. That'll be pretty good. Yeah. 6 o'clock. That'll be a lot of fun.
Then they also play at Hingham. Another team that, like I said, in the top 10, the 21st, they have another home game against Acton Boxborough, which if you've seen, you know, seen any of those games the last couple of years, they have been one or two goal games when they played each other, highly entertaining. And then they finish out the year on the road against BC High, 6 o'clock start on another Thursday night, 6 o'clock start. That one, again, those two have always played really good games. Last year, BG won that game. I think I was telling you, I went back and listened to a couple of the podcasts from a year ago, and I just so happened to listen to one after that game. And we were discussing the fact that BG scored 20 goals against BC High last year, which, from what I could find, may have been the most goals they'd ever given up in a game, which is just
you'd have to go back pretty far, but yeah. I mean,
the records online don't go back that far.
Right.
But as far back as I could go, no one had come close to scoring 20 goals.
I mean, if nothing else, it's impressive given what BC High has done over the last few years.
Yeah. That game, though, at BC High, always a very difficult place to try to get to. I feel like the first time I went there, I was maybe driving around for about half an hour trying to find a place to park.
Leave early
if you're going. Yep.
Okay.
Especially 6 o'clock on a Thursday, trying to get into Boston. Maybe
you get a hotel room.
I might go down at like 11 o'clock in the morning and just enjoy the day down there. Hopefully it's a nice day. But that is that's BG's out of state schedule, and like you said, Pinkerton's not too far off from that. They're doubling up with Bedford this year. Bedford. I think they have a couple of. Bedford and Londonderry, I believe they... No, maybe I'm wrong on that. I thought they only had 5 out-of-state games this year. Or am I wrong?
Well, I mean, just looking, they got St. John's High, they got St. John's High School on 4/13.
St. John's Shrewsbury.
Correct.
Yeah.
Not St. John's
Brown. No.
They have their traditional game with Long Meadow. They get them at Pinkerton this year, so that'll be...
That one's away.
Is it?
Yeah. This schedule I'm looking at. On the 24th, April 24th.
You're right, it is away. They had it listed football field.
So I was assuming
it was Pinkerton's football field, but it's not. They've got longer. Well, that'll be a tough road trip for them. They got Hingham to travel up here to play them.
And then later in the year they've got at Algonquin and then home against Andover. I feel like that when they played Algonquin up here last year, I feel like I was at that. And if I'm remembering the game, I know I did the St. John's Shrewsbury game, which was an exciting one because they got down early and then just exploded in the second half of that one. Algonquin, I believe they won as well.
I thought for some reason, sticking in my mind that was a shootout too.
I think it might have been. Yeah. But I mean, another really good schedule.
Yeah.
Out of state schedule for Pinkerton. Again, if like BG's too, and not a lot of those games are going to be home games. So if you want to see, some of them, you're going to have to hit the road. 14-6 was the final in that one. So maybe they put up a lot of goals, but, didn't give up.
It wasn't
a
shootout, but they put up. Yeah.
So that's their out of state schedule. Of course, Bedford has a couple of out of state games this year. I think they've added some more. I feel like some of these are traditional games, but. A few extras this year. Lexington, I feel like
they
played
scrimmaged them in the past.
In the past, maybe then that's what
I'm
thinking of. But that's a home game for Bedford. Another 6 o'clock, I believe that's a Thursday game.
Yep,
April 17th. They go to Westford Academy on a Saturday morning at the end of the month, end of April. That's I think is a new game for them. I don't think those programs have played before. They got Marblehead on a Friday night at 7. Which I think that's more of a traditional game for them. They've played a couple times in the past. Going to North Andover, that's another new one as well. So nice, and then they double up with Exeter and Pinkerton this year. So pretty challenging schedule for a Bedford team that I think we both expect to be pretty good this year.
Yeah, but I mean, if you look at it, right, and we're going to look at Exeter and Londonderry in a second, I mean, it's kind of cool to see BG, Pinkerton, Bedford, Exeter, Londonderry, arguably, I think probably
the
teams
top,
that
the,
we're going to talk yeah, about yeah, as being in the yeah. top five for D1 in the next couple of weeks, all challenging themselves. So, you know, they're all playing good out-of-state teams. You don't have to worry about dropping games and dropping in the standings there. You just you go out and you play hard, and you're getting better. You're challenging yourself in that respect.
Yeah. Yeah, as you said, Exeter, they right out of the chute, home game April 9th against Lincoln Sudbury.
That's a good one to open to open with. I mean, you're gonna see what you're made of right away.
You know, and I mean, we're talking about who another top 10 team from last year. Lincoln Sudbury was seventh in Mass to end last season, so a nice challenge there to open up. And then
yeah, I mean, they've won a bunch of state titles recently in at the top level. You know, by their standard, maybe down a little bit, but like still a top 10.
They were seventh team. Instead of top
right,
five.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Yeah. Then Exeter has Chelmsford coming up about a week after that. Excuse me. Melrose, I believe that's a new game for them. I don't think they've played before, at least not recently. And then later on in the year, they've got a road game at Acton Boxborough.
Boy, and that is a killer stretch too. They've got Chelmsford, Pinkerton, Melrose, Portsmouth, BG, Nashua North, and then BG again, all within it looks like 2 weeks. There, that's a gauntlet right there.
I feel like they had a similar stretch last year too.
Yeah.
And it was they had kind of mixed results. I feel like in some of those games, some guys maybe got banged up a little bit.
Yep.
But yeah, I mean that's
boy, yeah, they challenged us. I mean they added Portsmouth, they double up with BG, they double up with Bedford, Acton Boxborough in there. you know, and you said Lincoln Sudbury to start the season. Londonderry twice. That's a really good schedule.
I mean, I love to see that. I love to see these kind of schedules put together.
If they can stay healthy, they'll be battle tested going in the playoffs for sure.
And then Londonderry has a couple of early out of state games, just two on their schedule, but could be interesting ones. Both home games in the same, actually back to back. One against Framingham. That's April 17th.
Yep.
And then they follow that up on the 19th with hosting Central Catholic, which you know is another. They might have played last year. I don't remember off the top of my head, but that I feel like that could have been a game that happened a year ago. But certainly two interesting games. Out-of-state games
seems
for Londonderry.
Seems like a lot of this year's schedule has a lot of out-of-state games that where our teams are traveling on the road this year.
Yeah.
Not as many good. Hopefully we can, you know, they can keep those going for a couple of years and maybe we get, I mean, if you had all those games here in New Hampshire this year, that'd be unbelievable.
Actually, well, both of Londonderry's are listed as home games. And they did play Central Catholic a year ago, lost 11-9 on the road. So yeah, but you're right. I feel like a lot, like we said, BG's only like got two at home.
Yeah, and BG
Pinkerton's
last year, I feel
two.
Like we had some. Yeah.
There were more here.
We got lucky last year. We were more of those games were in-state last year. So hopefully that cycle continues, and next year we get those back.
Yeah, St. John's was St. John Prep. BG was at Stellos. So was BC High. Hingham, I think they played over at PMA. You know, so yeah, a couple of those games were up here, and then. You know, there's even a couple D2 teams going out and playing some Mass games. Your guys are going down to Westwood again.
Yep. Had a great game with them last year. Return the favor going down to them this year. Again, they look really strong, and we're excited to play them again.
We also went down there in 2019. I remember that game because it was
super windy.
Super windy. I almost lost a hat.
We almost lost the game, but we didn't.
You did almost lose the game, too. Yeah, yeah, you did.
It's a good 6-5 game, but it you know you think oh ugly 6-5 game, but it was good back and forth. There was just you know good goalie play, good action all around. It definitely helped our guys that season get
sure.
better.
Yeah, and then Portsmouth and Winneconnet both opened their seasons with out of state games. Portsmouth has I believe Newburyport
yep.
to open the year, and then Winneconnet playing Marshwood to open the season. You know Keene. Traditionally plays, you know, some Vermont teams. They've got Brattleboro Union on their schedule this year. We know Hanover has done that
usually
in the past,
like Essex
yeah.
Junction or something,
yeah.
one of those schools up there.
If they are, it's not on their schedule yet.
Right.
So, still, again, another schedule being finalized there. It sounds like, but certainly a great slate of D1 teams playing playing some out-of-state games and some interesting
matchups. It's pretty cool to see how it's come. I would say in the last 5 years, how it's become kind of a norm for teams to be able to go out of state and play like that, where it wasn't that long ago where we really didn't get many out-of-state games like that.
It was usually
really confined to like
BG,
Pinkerton and BG doing a couple games out of state, and they weren't doing six games. You know, it was very, very selective. I remember Pinkerton's been playing Longmeadow for as long as I can remember. I remember going down to Duxbury a couple times with it when BG was playing down there.
I remember going, yeah, or they would play at LaSalle.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, talk about terrible parking for.
I think I walked about four blocks one time trying to find
I think I parked in someone's front yard once or in a tree. that was the first time going down there. And what was tough about that one, too, was, I mean, you could stand around the field, but there's hardly any room to, like, stand on the sideline and shoot pictures or video. I thought a couple times I might get killed. It was like being in an indoor game. But anyway, all right. I think it's time to finally get to this this playoff discussion. We'll try not to go, I guess, too long with this. But as you alluded to, you know, this year they elected to change the format for the boys' championship games. Three games, three different locations, same time, same date.
Not only the finals, but the semifinals.
But the semis have kind of, I feel like, have always been that way, though. Although.
I don't know if they've always been on the same day.
They're all on the same day. That's brilliant.
So, how do you really feel about it?
I think what I'm used to is, I feel like in the past they've done maybe like D1 and D2 on different days, and D3 overlaps. But then you also had girls' finals mixed in there too. And I guess we'll give them that. You know, the D1 and D2 girls finals are on a Tuesday at the same time, and for whatever reason, D3 girls is on Thursday. So at least, hey, I can get to drive to Laconia on Thursday to see the D3 girls final. I don't know. I guess I start out with maybe it's me being selfish. I want to see all three of these games.
Well, I can tell you, I am on the lacrosse committee, and what I will tell you is that there were the venues available are difficult this time of year. Like, how great would it be to have everything at, say, Southern New Hampshire, right, or St. Anselm or UNH or other things like that? The difficult part is when this is happening, the colleges are out for the year, right? A lot of their staff and other things, you know, the event coordination people and things like that are gone, right? They're not on campus anymore. And I would say, I don't know, you know, maybe just people did a reevaluation during COVID or other things, but they're very hesitant to do events like this now once school is out. What I would say is we've talked a lot about doing a rotation, right, where, the events are all held at a school, but it rotates, right? Like maybe Pinkerton hosts 1 year and then Stellos hosts 1 year and then Bedford and then Exeter. I'm going to bring it up in the coaches meeting that, like, if people want to see that happening, more coaches need to advocate to their ADs and principals, like, hey, let the NHIA know that we are open to hosting this. Or what does it take to do this, right? What do we need to do? Because otherwise it's not going to change. It's going to go back. There is no agenda. I will tell you, there's no agenda. There's no, like, the NHIA is pushing it to be at this venue or anything else. It's more just like, look, they need a place to play, and these are the people that have stepped up and can do it.
I never thought there was an agenda, because I don't think that's how they operate. I told you when we first were talking about this, is that I'm going to have to call you Saturday night and find out what happened in the D2 game. You know, like because I'm not going to be there. I will be at the D1 final. Sorry to everybody that's in that wants D2 coverage. Sorry, everybody that wants D3 coverage. That's the way it's got. You know, the majority of members and followers are from D1 schools. You know, there's good. This is what they did. You're just being honest right now.
You know, and it does. That's what stinks for a lot of teams and kids, is that, you know, reporters like yourself are going to have to make a decision about where what is their readership going to view and pay for. And, you know, possibly when you can do all three of them, people might. But when you can only be at one, you got to make a decision. You're not being mean. I can't be in three places at one time.
Trust me, I've been trying to figure it out, and it just doesn't work that way.
you know, it would be nice if maybe there was ability to live stream for free for reporters. So you
can, that would have been nice to know before I renewed my NFHS network membership last week or the week before. But yeah, that would be a nice thing to have too. And I say that too. But usually the live streams are done by our friends at FNL Media. But they're going to be in the same boat. They're going to have to pick one game to go to.
Right.
So someone else is going to have to do, the other two games. And if they're going on at the same time, I guess.
That's the cruddy part, because FNL Media has done a great job of live streaming the last couple of years.
NFHS with the live stream, which then if you wait a couple of days, then it's up on their page for free.
We haven't talked to them. Maybe they've gotten big enough. Maybe they've expanded. Now maybe they'll have multiple crews during games. You won't have Roger Howe at every game, but you might.
What I am encouraged about with this, and this isn't just a lacrosse thing. You know, there were a lot of people that I talked to with basketball playoffs just happening too that were very frustrated with there being no semifinal location known until 3 days before the games. Initially the D1 and D2 girls finals were supposed to be on a Saturday, and the boys on Sunday. And then there was rumors going around all of last week. Nope, the girls are being moved here. Nope, one of the girls' games is being moved here. Nope, both of them. Oh, they're going to play, this time. And then, I was behind the scenes, I was going back and forth with probably about three or four different people.
I'm not on the basketball committee, so I have no idea what
Well, it was because the UNH men's basketball team ended up hosting an America East game on Saturday. Which, how do you not know that in advance of 3 days before the game's supposed to be played?
Depends on when the semifinal.
You don't.
Right?
Well, I mean, you don't know. Obviously, going into the season, how good they're going to be, but it's an 8-team conference, so four teams are going to host. I mean, it's a 50% chance that you're, or I don't know. I don't know. Math is hard. But there's a pretty good chance that you're going to be one of the teams hosting a game. How do you go and schedule tournament games for that day? Unless you're just
I think they were. UNH clearly is probably not rooting against their program.
No, I'm not saying that they were, but the NHIA probably was thinking that.
Correct. Probably gave the NHIA the opportunity to, like, look, if our team doesn't advance, then yes, we can host. If they do, then you can't. And NHIA rolled the dice and just said, hey, we'll gladly take it. And I'm sure they had a backup plan, but just didn't. You don't announce it. Although I guess they could have. They could have said, hey, it's either going to be at UNH or it's going to be at this location.
Well, their backup plan was to move all four games onto the same day.
Yeah.
Which I don't know why they had to wait until Thursday to do that.
Yeah.
Though, people have lives. They plan things. If they're planning all week that this is going to be Saturday and then all of a sudden 2 days before you change it to Sunday. I mean, granted, we're not talking like the NFL moving a Monday night game, football game, to a Sunday. But it's still... it's something. Right. What I was getting at was I've been encouraged to hear from parents, coaches, even kids that they're frustrated by this. Like they want all three of those lacrosse games to be on the same, at the same place.
Right.
They don't want them to be all at the same time. They want people to want to be able to see all those games. And I in the past, I wasn't always sure that was the case, but I'm not saying it's everybody. Everybody feels like that. But I'm hearing from more people that want that. And
I've
encouraged.
Heard from my kids that they're disappointed that they won't be able to watch some of the other games and their friends that they've played club with and things like that play. Whether we're in the game or whether we're going to be spectators, they still can only go to one game, right? And they won't be able to do it. I think we had a good plan in place when if it could have continued to have been at Exeter or one location, we were going to go with a rotating schedule where everybody got, it would rotate between the divisions and in the in quote spotlight game, right? The night game there and rotate through that. In fact, I think it would have been Division III's turn this year to have the late game.
I feel like that almost should be a little bit more flexible. Because I thought I thought last year worked out perfectly.
I personally, I think it did too, but I don't know if everybody agrees with that. But it was fun.
Well, you know what? I hate being the guy that just sits there and complains about something and doesn't come up with a solution. So
you're going to give a solution?
I got a solution for you. So part of the, I know I've said to you a number of times, you know, when we're waiting for brackets to come out over Memorial Day weekend, games are done on Friday. Why can't I have brackets on Saturday? And you tell me, well, schedules haven't been finalized. They're not due until, right. What
you
is
gotta
it?
You got to verify your schedule, all that kind
well,
of stuff.
You know what? Let's verify them on Saturday morning. Like, just, can we do this? So that's my first, the season ends that last Friday before Memorial Day weekend. Let's verify our schedules Saturday morning, and then we can all go have fun for Memorial Day weekend. We know what the brackets are. But what that also opens up is then we can play tournament games on Tuesday. Because if you're not putting out brackets until Tuesday, you can't ask teams to go play on Tuesday. Like, that's not – even if you put them on Tuesday and ask them to go play Wednesday, I still feel like that's not fair. But if we've got brackets done on Saturday, playoffs start on Tuesday – wait, is that that? Yeah, he's just picked up a stick here. I thought he was gonna.
Thinking out loud, it's your thinking stick.
That's good. I was a little worried there for a minute.
We're not gonna hit you with a lacrosse stick, Joe. You're good.
So what I'm saying. So one idea I had was, let's start. I think this might actually be the case now. Start with girls prelims on that Tuesday, boys prelims on that Wednesday. Girls quarterfinals on Thursday, boys quarterfinals on Friday. That gets us into, or now we're into the semis.
Are you talking about the Tuesday after
Memorial Day, which
weekend.
I think is actually what it is now. Girls start the Tuesday after Memorial Day. Boys don't start until Thursday.
Boys used to.
But they also have the girls quarterfinals on Thursday.
Right.
So there's overlap there. That makes it tough. So then we have girls semis on Saturday, let's say. I've already screwed it up. So we've got boys quarterfinals on that Friday. Let's girls semis on that Saturday. Then when we get to no games on Sunday, we'll take Sunday off. We'll come back Monday, have just the boys semis in Division III up at Laconia on Monday. We'll do boys semis D1 and D2 on Tuesday, then play the girls D1 and D2 finals on Wednesday at the same place. So if you want to go see the – they used to actually do that. It's new. They had one and two back-to-back. I remember Larkin Field was the old field that they used to use, and I always felt very bad for the team that played the second game on one side of the field because the goalie was staring into the sun the entire time, and usually that team lost.
So
we've got girls finals D1 and D2 on Wednesday. Thursday we turn around and we have D3 boys and girls, let's say at Laconia, because that's what they've been using for Division 3. I think that works out great because most of the schools that are in D3 in D3, you could potentially have, you know, schools playing back-to-back, like, you know, boys and girls, same school back-to-back in that final. We'll take off Friday, come back Saturday, and play the D1 and D2 boys final somewhere.
I would like to look at that on paper and see how much rest you are giving teams between games.
Granted, that is a little bit of an issue.
But basically with that solution, you've made it so that all that you, as a reporter, you could get to.
I could get to everything.
You could get to everything.
That's the only
feedback I would give you in the NHA is that, you know.
So how much.
It's not football, but it's like, you know, how much rest, how much practice. And then the issue with that, the other issue is, you know, you have to factor in weather. Right at that time of year, you have thunderstorms.
Yep.
You can have other things where, you know, things get pushed or delayed, or you just can't play that day. And so, on paper, right, it does eliminate some of the problem of playing it, you know, at the time. But you would still need to be flexible. That there's the possibility you would then overlap because of weather and other things.
Sure. So, how many days are you looking? Would you ideally?
Ideally, I think two would be appropriate.
Well, let me say right now, as it is, girls only get one day. From prelims to quarters, there's one day off. From quarters to semis, there's one day off.
Yep.
That's what this schedule would have, and it would also do the same for the boys between prelims and quarters. But then going from semis to finals, you've got multiple days off in between for everybody.
Probably it would probably still work. I think that would probably be okay. Yeah.
The other thing I think I'd mentioned to you at one point this winter was the potential for, you know, doing, like I said, with D3 for all three divisions, have, instead of breaking it up into boys and girls, having it broken up into divisions. So you have D3 boys and girls one night, D2 boys and girls another, and D1.
Yep, that would be kind of cool.
I think that would be fantastic.
And then, like you said, if a school happens to have, you know, this boys and girls programs, you know, you could get a nice student body turnout at the same location all in one night for that. So, yeah, that could be good.
All right. Well,
I will tell you the one, you know, the only, well, I wouldn't say it's the only advantage, but, like, the way things are set up this year, you know, the one thing that they said would be a little bit of a selling point is that, you know, the winning team, you know, you do kind of get rushed off the field at the end, right? Like, and I get it, like, you're rolling your eyes at me, but, like, for those kids in that time,
I could not have rolled my eyes harder, I don't think.
You know, it's nice for those kids and those families to be able to take photos and enjoy the moment and not feel like, hey, there's a game coming on next. Or if you did have the late game, it's like, hey, the workers want to go home. Get the hell out of our stadium. Like, get out of here. And, you know, so in that respect, you know, clearly the losing team will still want to go home. But, like, you know, the winning program and the kids will get an opportunity to celebrate a little bit longer and enjoy the moment.
Sure. I've definitely seen
not
that.
A reason I've, to do it necessarily, no. But it will be a nice advantage.
I will say, yeah, I've seen that start to happen now with the Division I football finals since the last few years they've been at a neutral site high school, where, you know, I've been at these games. You finish up, you do your interviews, you pack up all your stuff. It's been a good half hour, 45 minutes, and there's still about a couple hundred people on the field.
Well, that's
just
a little
hanging
excessive.
Around.
I don't know if we need to go past 45 minutes.
Well, that's what we're talking about here. I'll tell you another. We've got another fun one from basketball this past week. You know, they're trying to keep people off the floor after the D1 boys final, and there was a whole lot of Pinkerton people just running out there to the point where I saw someone try to stop this woman who was running from one corner of the court to get to the Pinkerton bench on the other side. She actually got stopped. Someone said to her, "Stop! You're not allowed to be out here." And she kind of went, turn around and just kept going. And I mean, what are they going to do? Like,
right.
Throw, you know, arrest her, throw her out, you know, yeah. Game's over at that point. But it's, you know, I there's a time and place for celebrating. And I don't necessarily, I don't know. I guess this makes me the bad guy, but
fun
I don't
police.
Feel like right in the middle of the field, you know, while someone else is trying to come out and play. I don't know if that's the place for
well,
it.
Well, that's the point. They wouldn't. Yeah, there won't I be guess. Someone else coming yeah. out to play after
well,
that. But
I hope. I hope
you know, I agree with that. I hope we can find a solution for it in the years going forward here, because you know, it is disappointing not to have all the games on the same location.
You know, add a half an hour more in between the games. Like, just
you could
stretch the day out a
yeah.
little bit.
Yeah,
that's off the top of my head. See, yeah. All right, that's all I got. Anything else that you want to throw out there before we wrap up for week one? I think we've been going long enough.
Well, no, looking forward to next week. I believe we're going to do
D1
preview next week.
Our D1 preview. I'm going to follow the format we did a year ago. Instead of just reading off a list of names, we are going to ask our D1 questions, a question for each team going into the season, and kind of roll with that as our preview again. I thought that was pretty fun to do last year.
Yeah,
I think it came out pretty
it.
Well. Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah. And then maybe even Sunday. I'm not sure. Sunday or Monday this week, we'll begin getting into
what day are we taping next week?
It'll be early, right? Because you're going to be.
I'm just wondering which roller coaster I'm going to be in line for when we're doing it.
We'll tell the
people. I was
people
at the Rockin' Roller
there.
Coaster last well, time, but I've been heard. I heard it's shut down right now.
Oh,
so I'm a little
well, that's a bummer.
Yeah,
that was a good one.
But it was a very good one.
Yeah.
And then preseason watch list. Any idea when you might have
that? I believe will be the Sunday before the season starts,
okay.
April 7th. To
oh,
look
so
out
we
for
got
that.
A little time.
Yeah, we got a little time on that.
That.
Yeah, a lot of time on that.
You got to do some research.
Exactly. Okay. Yeah, yeah. Can only learn so much from indoor. All right. Well, that'll wrap us up. He is Chris Hettler. Chris, thanks again, as always, for doing this. I am Joe Marcellina, and we'll talk to you next week.